Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
As shelter-in-place orders are slowly lifted, businesses will enter uncharted territory as to how to reopen. And joining me now, I have labor lawyer Chantel Egan with the San Francisco law firm of Seifarth, and she has some legal insight on how businesses will reopen and how all of this will happen. So thank you for joining me today, Chantel. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. It's my pleasure.
Now, as we all start to get back to work in the post-COVID-19 landscape, it's going to look quite a bit different than it did before. What are some of the first steps that businesses need to take to get back to work?
The state actually gives guidelines on this exact issue. And the take-home from those guidelines is you need to plan, and then, frankly, plan some more. As part of returning, each employer needs to conduct a site-specific plan in order to make sure that their facility is ready to accept employees back into the workplace. And then not just the facility itself, but also what are the programs, policies, and training that need to be implemented to make sure that employees are ready to join back into the workforce. There's actually quite a laundry list of things to do. And one of the things that is quite helpful is that the state has issued industry-specific guidance, both in terms of very robust guidance that Cal OSHA has put together in conjunction with the Public Health Department, as well as a simple checklist that is a guideline for employers, letting them know that they're ready to open. And frankly, if they can check all the boxes, they should be able to do so and then post it in the workplace so that their employees feel confident that they are in compliance with all the measures that the state has put together in order to protect us from COVID-19.
Okay, now let's get a little bit more specific about that. After the businesses, after they've worked out their return to work plan, what is their next step as far as they decide who returns to work first?
The most important thing is to make sure that any kind of plan to have employees return to work is rooted in a business need and has no indication that there may be any kind of discrimination or bias as part of the selection process. And this can actually be a little bit tricky because as the state and many counties have given guidance about vulnerable populations, for example, individuals that are above a certain age or individuals with pre-existing conditions, it is tempting to look to those as initial guideposts and use those as factors in deciding who to bring back. But we don't want to go down that road because that could potentially lead to a discriminatory practice. So instead, focusing more on the need that you need for a business and then waiting for employees to indicate that they either are unable to return to work or perhaps need accommodations so that they can return to work because they are a member of a vulnerable class, for example, someone who has a pre-existing condition.
Okay, now will social distancing be required at the workplace and in offices? And if so, how long do you expect it to continue or will it be indefinite?
Social distancing is absolutely going to be a big part of returning to the workplace. In office spaces in particular, one of the requirements is that you really look at the design of your office to determine whether social distancing can be achieved in the space and design that you already have or whether changes need to be made in order to promote social distancing. So, for example, if you had a room with, you know, clustered of people working at one work table, you're going to want to take a look at that plan to figure out how can I readjust my office environment so that people can sit at least 6 feet apart and ideally also have ways that they can transfer materials without actually having to contact one another. So, for example, setting up shelves or other different transfer locations so that, for example, if I had to give you a piece of paper, instead of handing it to you, I could put it into put it on a transfer location, and then you could go to the transfer location at a different time so that we do not need to be 6 feet. Rather, we can keep 6 feet of distancing. And in particular, I would also mention that, you know, part of the social distancing is how you're getting into the office. So for companies that have elevators and other kinds of methods that people typically gather in order to come up into the office, you need to have plans in place to limit the number of people into the office, in particular elevators. So for companies that are working in buildings that have numerous tenants, this is something that you're going to want to talk to the building management about, how it is that they are going to help facilitate that only a small number of people are allowed into an elevator, or perhaps even only one person at a time.
As far as testing goes, are businesses going to be required to test their employees on symptoms or even an antibody test before they return to work? And what happens if an employee wants to continue to work from home because they're afraid of returning to the workplace because of COVID-19?
So with testing right now, there's two ways to look at it. One of it is to look at the actual testing for COVID-19 or for antibodies. And the other side of the coin is symptom screening and temperature screening. As of right now, the state standards are that in order to enter into the workplace, there needs to be a symptom screening, and in particular, that your temperature needs to not be elevated. Now, how employers are going to go about that is wide-ranging. Some employers are making the decision to actually do on-site screening, for example, with an infrared thermometer. Other employers are making a decision to have their employees self-certify each day so that they just don't come into work if they have any of the symptoms. An important thing for employers to remember is that the state has been very specific in saying that the more onerous standards put forward by the counties will continue to be enforced. So if you're in a county that decides to enforce a stricter standard, so for example, requiring that temperature checks are taken at the workplace rather than an employee certified, you will be held to that standard. So important for employers to make sure that they're closely monitoring what is happening on the local level, not just at the state level. Additionally, with screening, employees, if they feel any symptoms come on while they're at the workplace, they need to be aware that they need to immediately leave the workplace and notify their manager. And this really goes into that larger thing of what I was saying earlier about planning for return to work, is these are policies that you probably didn't have in place that you now need to develop, as well as make sure that all the employees are well aware of what those policies are so that they can have the proper training and understand what the expectations are to keep people safe. In terms of antibody testing or testing for COVID-19, there is no requirement that that particular testing happens at this time, and so employers are not required to do so. There is discussion that some employees have a fitness for duty test in order to return to work, especially in places where it becomes more challenging to have 6 feet social distancing. But once again, none of that is required. Now, the other question that you asked was, what if people don't want to come back to work? What if they're scared? This is really where the planning is so important, because a huge piece of alleviating employees' fears is recognizing that your employer has a plan and is executing that plan, so that there is rigorous cleaning standards, that they have screening, so that you know that your fellow coworkers do not have any symptoms of COVID-19, that your coworkers are not going to be coming into the workplace if they have close exposure to somebody with COVID-19, knowing that there is social distancing protocols, feeling confident that you have adequate materials, whether that's masks, gloves, plenty of hand sanitizer, and having all of those elements in place before an employee shows up at work will go a long way of alleviating any fears. And then additionally, listening to your employee and making sure that you understand why it is that they don't want to return to work. So, for example, as I was saying earlier, there could be somebody who is in a vulnerable population, or perhaps they have to care for an individual who's a member of a vulnerable class, or as many of us, myself included, are busy with children, and you may have an employee that needs more flexibility because they have childcare responsibilities as well as teaching responsibilities.
Okay, now let's move along to restaurants. How will businesses like restaurants deal with customers in the future?
So this is actually a really interesting issue, and we're seeing a lot of counties, in addition to the state, issue very specific guidance on how to manage really bringing dine-in restaurants, you know, back to life, because so many of them have had to limit operations to takeout and delivery to the extent that they could do so. What we're going to see is the same social distancing protocols I was talking about before. We're going to see that in a restaurant setting. So, for example, if there is multiple tables, they will not have seating at all of the tables. Rather, certain tables will be left vacant. Additionally, there will be protocols as to the amount of capacity that a restaurant can have, and it'll be a very limited capacity for dining in. Additionally, we're seeing a lot of local areas modifying open space so that there can be more open-air dining, especially, you know, as we're entering into the summertime and it's more feasible to have open-air dining. That's also another way that restaurants are hoping that to entice customers back in, knowing that they can keep them far apart, but also out in the open rather than in an environment with recycled air conditioning. And then last but not least, we can't forget what's going to be changing quite a bit is just how we interact with the wait staff. They will be wearing masks. The menus that they hand customers will most likely be paper that then can be discarded after a customer looks at them. Likewise, tablecloths and things of that nature will likely be a thing of the past, as well as we'll be seeing a lot more disposable knives, forks, spoons, cutlery, as well as napkins and things of that nature.
Okay, now as far as capacity goes for these restaurants, how much are we talking about them having to cut back? 50% to 25% with such thin margins that restaurants live on all the time? That could be problematic for them in the future.
It's going to be a very significant reduction, especially as this first stage. Now keep in mind, in California, there's a 4-stage process. And right now, we are at the beginning of stage 2. And the way I look at it is that it's, you know, akin to swimming. You know, stage 1 was when we first started shelter in place, and the only people out were the essential workers, the lifeguards, if you will. Then for stage 2, we started by putting our toe in the water with curbside retail and things of that nature. Now, various counties are moving more swiftly through stage 2 because they have met certain parameters in terms of the amount of cases in their counties, as well as their capacity to handle any subsequent surge. And so by the end of stage 2, we're going to see, you know, dine-in restaurants. We're going to have more people returning to office spaces. So back to that analogy about swimming, you know, we started with our toe in the water, and then we're going to get to that place where, you know, we're waiting. We are, you know, our feet are still firmly planted at the bottom of the pool, but we're finally actually in the water. And then with stage 3, that's when things are going to really start to open up a little bit more, and we're going to have more open spaces that we can go to. We'll be able to gather more, and that's when we're swimming, but really close to the edge. And then finally, stage 4 is going to be, you know, we're off and swimming again. And the take home for all of this, just like learning to swim, is each of these stages will be quite long. And there will be times when we perhaps have to roll things back. You know, we'll push it a little bit too far and be like, we're not ready for that, whether it's because there's been an increase in cases or perhaps companies are opening when they shouldn't. And we'll see a rollback. It'll be a give and a take. So with restaurants in particular, they have been so hard hit, and we've seen restaurants that have had to close, shutter in its entirety because the takeout or delivery just hasn't been enough to keep them sustained. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not, frankly, customers feel comfortable, even as dine-in is allowed to begin to open up, whether customers will feel comfortable. That's really why these measures that we're seeing, for example, the open-air dining, are the restaurant's efforts to try to make sure that they are not only complying with the requirements of state and the county, but they're also meeting their customers' needs so that their customers feel comfortable.
Okay, now as far as new procedures go, will there be some new official procedures, new official OSHA safety procedures that will be put into effect?
So right now, OSHA has issued guidance for numerous industries. We anticipate that much of this guidance will be translated into OSHA rules. However, that rulemaking process takes time, but I would not be surprised if that is the ultimate outcome for the guidance we're seeing now, that it is converted into OSHA rules.
And what about planning for future outbreaks?
The key with all of this is that with each plan, you have to have a strategy of what to do if the plan that you've implemented, whether because it's in your own workplace or because there's a larger community outbreak, you need to scale back. That needs to be an integral part of every company's plan. Because as we saw when COVID-19 first really took hold in the United States, there was quite a bit of franticity, for lack of a better word, about how to handle it, how to switch gears, how to bring people remote. And that needs to be part of the strategy going forward. And part of that will be baked in to just the reopening. So, for example, as employers are looking at staggered scheduling and other things like that in order to make sure that their employees can do social distancing as well as meet their home obligations, taking those measures and applying them to any rollback that we see will be incredibly helpful for employers, and really need to be able to plan ahead for a time when they have to respond and actually have less people back in the workplace again.
Where can we go to get more information about all of this? Is there a place where we can find out some of these specific plans or requirements that the state has issued for people getting back to work?
Yes. The first place you should go is the California Coronavirus COVID-19 Response webpage that the California government has set up. The web address for that is covid19.ca.gov. That should be your first step. From there, there is a wealth of materials, including the roadmap that the state has planned out, as well as information about the expectations that the state has as you begin to plan for reopening and then ultimately reopen. Additionally, through that website, you can go to your local county to determine if there's any particular guidance that you need to follow based on your county. And I can't emphasize enough that it is really a two-prong approach that employees and the employers and the public need to go to in order to figure out what to do next, because the counties are permitted, like I said, in two ways, either to move faster through stage two because they've met certain thresholds, or alternatively, they're allowed to hold things back because they want to move more slowly. And when we're seeing counties move more slowly are counties that tend to be in more populated areas. So, for example, Santa Clara County is going to move more slowly than some of the other counties that are moving more swiftly through the process, such as Mariposa.
Chantel Egan with the San Francisco office of the law firm Seyfarth, and we've been talking about some of the regulations and requirements that businesses are going to need to adhere to as we head back to work. So thanks once again for joining me today, Chantel. Some great information.
Thank you so much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.